Then today, this is the second in the series. Stephanie Reed Meyer started us off well on One-Shot Wonders. These are sermons about the miracles of Jesus. And Stephanie did a great job last week. She talked about miracles. We have questions about miracles, don't we? I mean, we see miracles in the Bible, and sometimes we see apparent miracles in the lives of other people. We all pray for miracles, and we wonder why some people get them and others don't. And what I would say to you is Stephanie really addressed that pretty well last week. I'll say to you that when we read about the miracles in the New Testament, we see that there are really three reasons for miracles. One is the compassion of Jesus. Jesus would be walking along. He was a very compassionate human being. And so he would see somebody who was blind or someone who had leprosy, and he would heal them in order to end their suffering. In the same way that miracles are performed by so many of our medical personnel, nurses and doctors and others, they want to end the suffering. And many of you are recipients of that kind of really, truly miraculous healing. The other reason we see miracles in the New Testament is to reveal the power of God. If you open up the Gospel of John to the second chapter where Jesus turns water into wine at the Cana of Galilee, John will talk about that even in this way. He explains it. He says, this was the first of the signs that Jesus performed to reveal who he was. And so the whole structure of John is predicated upon the revelation. I think there are six signs he talks about, miracles which reveal who he was. But the third reason I think we see miracles in the New Testament, the reason what we're going to be talking about today and next week, is that miracles are teaching moments. On the one hand, Jesus is healing a person, but on the other hand, there are disciples standing by and others, and we are standing by reading about these miracles of Jesus. And so it's my belief that every time we study a miracle, it's a teaching moment. Jesus is teaching us something about life. And I certainly believe that is the case today. So we turn to the 8th chapter of Mark. This is really, I think, my favorite. It's an extremely important miracle to me, and I hope you'll see that as we preach about it. It's a remarkable story. And we're going to start with verse 17. This is the background, and I hope you'll see why. We'll point it out to you. The disciples have been talking about the fact that they don't have enough bread. They're out of bread. It's like, I got to go to the grocery store. We're out of bread. What are we going to do? And Jesus is frustrated with them. This is what he says. And becoming aware of it, Jesus said to them, why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not perceive or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes and fail to see? Remember that verse right there. That's where Jesus is setting us up for this miracle story. Do you have eyes, but you fail to see? Do you have ears and fail to hear? And do you not remember? And then he reminds them, when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces were left over? They said 12. And when I, in the 7 for the 4,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you collect? And they said to him, 7. Then he said, do you not understand that I am the source of bread in life? Then they came to Bethsaida. Here's the transition to the miracle. Some people brought a blind man to him and begged him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. He didn't want a big crowd for this, but there were people who were watching. And when he had put saliva on his eyes and laid his hands on him, he asked him, can you see anything? And the man looked up and said, I can see people, but they look like trees walking. Then Jesus laid his hands on his eyes once again, and he looked intently, and his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, I kind of got a kick out of this when I started thinking about it. When we started thinking about this sermon series on miracles, the preachers got together with the marketing people, and we said, we're going to preach some sermons on miracles, and the marketing people came up with this idea. We'll call it One-Shot Wonders. And everybody really loved that idea, and I thought, I loved that idea too. I thought it was great. Until I got ready, started preparing the sermon on this particular text, and I thought, well, that's kind of ironic because this isn't a one-shot wonder. This is a two-shot wonder. It didn't take Jesus one try here. It took him two tries to heal this man. In fact, if you'll read through your New Testament, you'll discover that this is the only occasion on which Jesus didn't succeed the very first time with a miracle. And for that reason, for me, it stands out. Jesus tried the first time, only partially successful. It took a second shot. It was a two-shot wonder. And finally, the man could see perfectly clearly. And I think, what is it that Mark is wanting to teach us in this particular story? It's a two-shot wonder, but the truth of the matter is, that's what makes this story interesting. So just to tell it real quickly, Jesus comes along, they bring this man out. We don't know what the first diagnosis was. Maybe he's been blind from birth, but Jesus touches him, puts saliva on his eyes, he touches him, he says, "Can you see clearly?" And the man says, "No." In this remarkable verse, he says, "I see people, but they look like trees." We'll come back to that in a moment. And so Jesus says, "Well, let me try one more time." And he touches him again, and all of a sudden, he sees clearly. Well, let me tell you, the first question I have about this particular story is the diagnosis for this particular man. What was the diagnosis? Well, we don't know what the first diagnosis was. When he couldn't see anything, maybe he'd been blind from birth. I don't know, maybe he'd been blinded in some other way, some disease. We don't know. But the second time, when he says, "I see people, but they look like trees, I just don't see clearly," we know what that diagnosis was. It was myopia. He was suffering from myopia, nearsightedness. Now, you know what myopia is. You know what nearsightedness is. But I love words. A lot of times, I like to look up words just to see maybe there's something that I'm missing about the meaning of that particular word. So I did that. I did it for you. I put it up here on the screen. Myopia. The first definition is from ophthalmology, of course, the medicine dealing with eyes. A condition of the eye in which parallel rays are focused in front of the retina. You don't really need to know the physics of this. Just look at that part. Nearsightedness. And I thought this was interesting. They said opposed to hyperopia. I didn't know what hyperopia meant, but I know what it means now. My father-in-law was farsighted till the day he died at age 87. He could see a mile off. But this is the best part. When I started reading about this definition, there are a couple of other meanings of the word myopia. Lack of foresight or discernment. Obtuseness. There's a word you could look up and see what that means. But you kind of get the idea, don't you? It probably means something like narrow-mindedness, intolerance. I wonder if those, myopia, I wonder if that's an important issue for us these days where we are in life. Myopia, nearsightedness, the inability to see people and situations clearly. Now, the problem with myopia or nearsightedness is that, of course, we don't know what we don't know. And so a lot of times people are myopic, but they don't know that. We have this great mission team called VOLT. They've been to Cameroon, they've been to Central America, they go to Oklahoma City often, and it's an eyesight, it's a ministry, it's an eyeglasses ministry. And they come back with these wonderful stories about people who are too poor to go to the ophthalmologist, and they come through, they test their vision, and they take with them hundreds of glasses of all sorts of prescriptions, and they put glasses on these people. And some of them, they're grown people, and they are amazed. They can see for the first time, see clearly for the first time in their lives. And they didn't know that they couldn't see well. Or maybe they knew they could see well, but they didn't know how much it was that way. My wife, Bobby, had cataract surgery last summer. Now, I don't talk about Bobby very much. It's probably a pretty good idea that I don't. I didn't get her permission to tell this story, but I'm going to anyway. She had cataract surgery. I went home one night, and she came back, and I sat down, and she said, "Well, my cataract surgery is scheduled for next Thursday." I said, "What did you say?" She said, "My cataract surgery is scheduled for next Thursday." I said, "Bobs, what are you talking about? You don't have cataracts." She said, "Oh, yeah, I do. I've got cataracts." I mean, I had no idea she had cataracts. When we go out to eat, a lot of times we go in her car. When we go in her car, she drives. She said, "When I went to get my visit today, he told me that I had the worst, and that in 15 years of practice, ophthalmic practice, I had the worst eyesight he had ever seen." I said, "Are you kidding me?" Because I knew this was going on. Whenever we go out to eat and she's driving, we'll be driving along, I'll say, "Bobs, do you see that red light up there?" She says, "Oh, yeah, I see." She's been driving my grandchildren around. You all didn't know that my life has been in danger. But this is interesting. She never told me that she had cataracts, but she knew she had cataracts. Nevertheless, when she came home from that surgery, some of you have had this 45-minute surgery. She came home Thursday, you had to keep her eye covered. When she woke up Friday morning, I walked in, she said, "Don, I cannot believe how well I can see, how clearly I can see." That's what happens with myopia, isn't it? Slowly, we begin to lose our vision. We don't see things as clearly, but we don't really understand it until all of a sudden. I think that's what's remarkable about this particular passage. This man has just been given the gift of vision, of sight. He's able to see for the first time, and yet somehow he knows and confesses that he does not see things clearly, that he sees people, but they look like trees. Now, I myself have 20/20 vision, but only when I'm looking backwards. When I look backwards, I see everything so clearly, and it's not necessarily a really good experience. I'm nearing the end of my seventh decade. I'll be 70 in a while, and I was thinking the other day, you know, there's got to be some advantages to growing old. And I figured out what one of them is. When you've been around for 70 decades, you've had a lot of experiences, and maybe you get a chance to look back on seven decades and you can learn something. Maybe you get a chance to have an insight. It'll bring a little bit more wisdom. And so if you were to ask me, just if you say, "Don, looking back on your seven decades, what are the most important things you have learned?" Right up there at the top of my list would be this. I've learned about all of the times when I was 100% that I was right, but I was wrong. Looking back, I've learned about all the times when I saw everything perfectly clearly, I thought I did, but I didn't. Looking back, I see all of the judgments that I made about persons and about situations, and I was so passionate. My personality, I was so passionate about my belief that I was right and they were wrong. And I look back, and it wasn't that simple. I wasn't always 100% wrong, but a lot of times I was partly wrong, and partly wrong enough to make mistakes of judgment. Judgment about circumstances and judgments about situations, and worst of all, judgments about other human beings. It's been eye-opening for me. If I could do it again, I surely would. And so you see, this is what I find interesting about this story, about this man who looks out there and he says, "Oh, I can see." But he says, I think I'm looking at people, but they look like trees to me. I just think it's interesting that that's the way this story is described to us. Because when we look at another human being, but what we're really seeing is an inanimate object. Trees are living things for sure, but they are what we would call inanimate objects. When we look at other human beings, but we see them as something less than human, when we see them as inanimate objects, bad things happen. And we're just human beings. So if you and I were freezing to death, if we were cold, we came upon a tree, this is what we'd do to a tree. We would cut the limb off a tree and build a fire in order to keep ourselves warm. Or if we needed a place to live, we would just cut down some trees and build us a house, a shelter of some kind. That's what happens when we don't see people clearly as people. We make misjudgments. We don't see things clearly. People get hurt. I just think this is a remarkable story about the power of Jesus to enter into a person's life and touch them and say, you know, I see pretty good, but it's not good enough. A person who confesses that they do not see people clearly, and they say, dear Jesus, help me to see these other human beings more clearly. Help me to see them as people, not as trees. And you know, this story impacts every part of our lives, every single part of our lives. For instance, our marriages, in our relationships. I've already talked about her once, so I'll talk about her a second time. Might as well get it all over with in one sermon, you know. Bobby and I, we just celebrated our 39th anniversary. Let me tell you, 39 years being married to the same person, living in the same house with the same person, you already know this. I mean, you have your ups and downs. There's some the good and some bad and so forth. More good than bad. But I'm going to tell you this, and I'm telling you what you already know. It is impossible to live 39 years with another human being if somebody isn't willing to say, but I think I was wrong. I think I was wrong. Bobby's been wise enough and insightful enough that she said it more often than I have. I think I was wrong. My stupidity occurred when I believed her. I thought, yep, you were wrong. I was right. And now I look back with a certain amount of humility and see how often I was wrong. Let me tell you something. It is important, it is impossible to live a robust Christian life. It is impossible to live as a follower of Jesus unless we build a spiritual foundation of humility. You just can't do it. You can start in the third chapter of Genesis, you can read all the way through the Old Testament and the New Testament without a spiritual foundation of humility, and it's difficult for most of us, if not all of us. Without a spiritual foundation of humility, it is impossible to fully follow Jesus. It is impossible to fully live inside the kingdom of God that the presence of Jesus in our lives makes possible. So it affects us. It affects our relationships and our marriages. It affects our politics. Listen, when it comes to partisan politics, Republican, Democrat, vote the way you vote, we stay out of that. We leave it to you. That's your business. But when it comes to the way in which our Christian faith impacts us about how we think about politics, that's fair game. That's fair game. And I have to tell you, I don't think we're doing it very well these days. A little bit more humility on the part of all of us would be helpful. I have these two grandsons, 7 and 11, and I'll take them with me here and there, and I think I'm a teacher half the time, and so I like to work with them on their math. So the other day we took three steers to the sale barn. We're driving the sale barn, and I just do simple things. I'll say, okay, you guys, we've got three steers back in the trailer, and if each of them weighed 500 pounds, and we got three of them, how many pounds would that be? And then I'll get a little bit more complicated. If we got $1.50 a pound, how much would that be? You know, so I'll do that kind of math with them. Well, let me just try a little simple math with you. If 100% of us believe that we are 100% right 100% of the time, but we don't all agree on everything, we've got a problem, don't we? I mean, this is just nothing but simple math. Just do the math. If 100% of us, if all of us believe that we're 100% right 100% of the time, just do the math, we've got a problem. A little humility would go a long way. I've gotten into the habit of saying, every time I express my opinion about something, not every time, but a lot of the times, I'll just say, but at age 70, I might be wrong. Wouldn't it be interesting if we were to allow Jesus to come into our conversation about politics and bring a little humility? Our conversations in the church, we've got tough issues in the church. What difference would it make if we were to say, Jesus, help us to see clearly and help us to confess our nearsightedness, that sometimes we might not have it right? I got to tell you, this is one of the best stories in all of the New Testament. I hope you leave today and you agree with me that this is one of the best teaching miracles in all the New Testament. That all we have to do is to say, Jesus, come into my life. Touch me once again. Help me to see other people as people, not as trees. Help me to see them and relate to them with love and compassion. Help me to see them as they are, as a child of God. Help me to see clearly. Thanks be to God.